and welcome to episode 56 of the Geek All-Stars. I am Dan, one of your hosts, and we are a podcast about board games, card games, video games, all things geekery. And today, we are joined by my buddy Chris, as always. Dice Hate Me Chris, welcome.
Hey, and thanks, and welcome to the State of Games, episode 48, and a crossover with Geek All-Stars once again.
Yep, we love to do these, and we got such good feedback about the crossover episode that we decided to do another one. And just like the last one, we were joined by some great industry powerhouses and the TC and Daryl out there. Today, we are joined by two of the greatest brothers in gaming that I know of, Fred and David McKenzie, in no specific order. But of Clever Mojo Games. Welcome, guys.
Hi, guys.
So we're going to do a little something special today. Again, we've got pretty much almost like a two halves of this. I wanted to go into Princess of the Dragon Throne, which is finishing up on Kickstarter within the next, I believe, right around 48 to 60 hours. We're getting that nice final push. We're going to see if we can get it over the edge. We're going to talk a little bit of the history of Princes, the future of Princes, and then some other things, where Fred came from with the idea and where things came from in there. And then we're going to go into a bunch of the future with Chris about Chris is going to start leading us into the future of Clever Mojo Games as a whole and what is in the future for them. Some bright things in the future for them, and I can't wait to see some of the games that are on the horizon. But I've gotten ahead of myself. So with on Kickstarter right now, as many of you know, since many of you faithful listeners have known, that we love Princess of Dragon Throne here in the Geek All-Stars and the State of Games. And we've been talking about it for nearly 2 years now. And the campaign, like I said, is winding down. It's right around 20,000 of the 25,000 goal, looking for that last push on Kickstarter. So I wanted to get a little bit of the history of Princes. Fred, tell us a little bit about the development of Princes. Chris had mentioned earlier in earlier podcasts that we talked that it was actually originally a pure deck builder. So talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, the game you played at Origins 2011, it was one of the earliest iterations once we had decided to go beyond just a deck builder, adding the area control and a certain type of worker placement. But the earliest iterations were actually 2 years before that. The original concept in 2009 we called Dragon Frenzy, and it actually required 125 dice. And that was before 4 years, so I just knew there was no way we could make a game with so many dice.
That's a lot of dice.
Yeah.
It is.
It makes me, I just want to get all those dice in my hand just thinking about it.
Yeah. So then we went through a couple different versions of a set collecting game where dragons were perched in the mountains surrounding a valley, and they were picking off the unwary travelers. And after that, we had a role selection game, sort of like Citadels, where each turn you got to choose what your dragon's personality was going to be. And based upon that, you could affect what happened to the other players. But at the end of 2010, I actually played my first games of Dominion and Ascension, and I was just smitten with deck building, and I knew that I wanted to be a part of the game.
It's funny when you talk about all those different things that it was, you can almost, you know, playing Princes as much as I did, you can see different areas where things came in, kind of like the, like you said, the set collection, picking off the Kingsguard, and then the role selection where you can see the different clan bonuses. I'm guessing that's probably where some of those things came in.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and I like that too. The especially the role selection. The earliest iteration that we played in Origins 2011 didn't really have some aspects of that in it, but you were just trying to play around with some of those aspects all together. It didn't really have an end game, so to speak, when we played originally, but you could start to see some of those things come in too. And I really like the role selection part with the clan bonuses.
It is funny when you talk about the dice. I can just see it now. We can have Princess of the Dragon Throne, the coffee game, the dice game coming out.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, perfect. We got another crossover.
So tell me a little about the deck building game part. You know, like you said, you had it originally like that. And how did the area control part morph? Do you still have that deck building itch in there? I know I've been trying to come up with some sort of, since I love deck building so much, I've been trying to come up with a straight deck builder, you know, even with the same theme. Fred, I'm sure after this we can come up with something and bring that design forward.
Oh yeah, we probably can, because I'm absolutely itching to get back to a straight deck builder. I think I've got a good idea in my head already. And I actually have several games in the Prince's universe I'd like to follow up on. As far as the deck building, the first attempt was close to Ascension. It had cards that could be purchased, and then once they were replaced by other cards. Our cards, though, were like they were characters traveling through the kingdom, so they're on a type of conveyor belt. And if they weren't purchased, they would eventually leave the game. So you had to get them before they did. And the cards were typical of the deck building genre in that they had a lot of text on them that allowed for manipulating the standard system. And of course, that means they were just cards with words. So that's it.
Yeah, and it's been it's funny how deck building, it seems to go in peaks and valleys, because you get people that are very tired of the word deck builder because it's, you know, you're just really just looking for the engine, and yet some of these games are coming out with such innovative mechanisms with deck building. You know, and Princess is a perfect example of it. I mean, I think we just have only really scratched the surface of what you can really do in a deck builder. And I think your idea of, you know, kind of marching through, you're definitely onto something there. I mean, you could pick, borrow, and steal from a lot of these different deck builders, and you can really kind of come up with something that's just really, really unique. And that world you've created, is it Loen? Is that how I would say it?
I just say Loen.
Loen. I mean, it's a beautiful universe. I mean, especially with the different clans and guilds and everything. It really, I think it's sky's the limit, especially when you have different factions in a deck builder. So when you were coming through and you went from all these different iterations, you know, I'm sure there's probably even a little bit of frustration in everything where you kind of kept looking for that one peak moment. What did you love about the finding that, and what was that one final, I got it moment?
Mm-hmm. I think my aha moment came when I was trying to figure out how to incorporate using the cards to place meeples on the board to achieve area control. I mean, we've got these character cards that represent the six races, the humans, the elves, dwarves, trolls, kobolds, and goblins. And I knew I wanted the game board to include each race's kingdom, but I still wasn't sure how that alone would lead to placing the meeples on the board. So it seemed kind of boring to say, well, I've got this dwarf card, so I can place a meeple in the dwarf kingdom. I mean, there's no decision there. Mm-hmm. So the aha came when I said, well, each character also belongs to a class of worker or guild, like the shepherds or merchants. So what if each kingdom also included one of each guild? And then, so I've got a dwarf merchant card, and then I can either place a meeple in any of the dwarf guilds or in any of the merchant guilds. And that gives you 11 different options for where you might want to place your meeple. I think it's really the heart of the game. And as a side benefit, it allowed me to take all the text off the cards, so they weren't just cards with words.
Yeah, I think so many of those... So many games out there that we're seeing now. I mean, you can look at things like Seasons as a perfect example of games that have so many icons in there. But honestly, even with Princes with a lot of the icons, these games with a lot of icons, all it takes is like 2 to 5 minutes of explaining what each icon is. And it's like it almost opens up a whole nother language to you, and you understand it. When you're looking at that Princes board and the cards, like in the first glance, a lot of people that I've showed the game to were like, oh, wow, this might be too much. And I'm like, no, just sit down. Give me like 2 seconds. You know, you start to explain what everything is. You explain the anatomy of a turn. And it goes from just the straight dudes on a map with icons to an actual flowing game that I really think that once people get that aha moment, like you said, and it really translates into that Prince's language, I think that's when people just love love that game. And I really think once we get, I think that's the big thing, like getting it into people's hands. Now, once, if we can get it over that next step, get it into production with, hopefully we can get this, get this Kickstarter funded, get it out, get those people, just get the games out. You know, you're nearing, probably going to need about 200 total or so backers. And then it gets it into the hands of people. And then you can start seeing the game anywhere. Do you guys think that once it gets into the hand, that'll build that demand for the game? And what do you think that initial run, that long-term goal of the initial run, what will that entail?
Well, I think that, you know, this is David here. I think that, you know, obviously if we get it out in the public where it can, you know, become viral or at least get some play, I think people will like it and it'll catch on, definitely.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And in so much of the fact that, you know, what I've played and bringing in other players in on the game, that what you said, Dan, is true. It seems a little daunting at first because there's just so many elements that goes with the game. But once you get that first round out, people just respond to it positively, and they get it, and they want to play it. I mean, there's a lot of games that are like that. I mean, honestly, I don't want to dice any games horns, but Viva Java is the same way. It's like, it's a ton to explain at first, but like after you play that first round, it just, people get it, and it's intuitive. And I think that Princes is one of those things that once the initial backers get in their hands, they start playing it, you get it out there in the market, people are going to love it, and they're going to say, look, you need to invest in this game, and you need to invest the time and the money and get in on this, because it's a really fun and unique board game experience that you don't really get from many other games that have any similar mechanisms, because it has deck building, area control, role selection. I mean, it has a ton of different things going for it, and it's a good package.
Well, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So, Fred, when we've kind of been going back and forth with different testing and stuff, you shared with me some ideas for an expansion plans that seem really promising. We're gonna try and scoop a little bit. I'm not sure if this is out, and I hope I'm not stepping on any toes with expansion plans. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the ideas you had for expansion and how the game can be expanded? I really think it's got a lot of potential, and I really would love to see that part released as well.
Sure. I guess I can give you a scoop. I mean, this whole interview is a scoop, right? It's my first.
Yep. So, Fred, it's like the star.
We got Fred out of hiding.
I know, exactly. It's awesome.
So, when we contracted the art, the game was still in development, and we thought we were going to have even more characters in the game than we do now. But we had to remove many of them for game balance purposes. So we've already got the art drawn for 12 more citizens and 12 more dragons and 11 secret agents. So I decided, you know, to design an expansion based around those cards. People who have played the game may have noticed all the Royal Guild cards are males, the kings of each race. So the expansion would highlight the queens of the land and their honor guards and two more clans of dragons who are loyal to the queens. And then we'd also bring in the current dragon queen, who is now a widow, and see what her plans for the throne might be.
That's very cool. The whole idea, you know, it's funny because I think even people were, somebody in one of the threads even brought up the fact that there was a female presence missing. And I think you even alluded to that was kind of on purpose, and that we may see something about that in the future. And I think, you know, that could generate some good buzz. And from all the rules and the ideas that you've got, I really think this is it could really add to the base game. I mean, the base game is a great game by itself, but then you don't even think about it as just a regular game player. Then when you approached me with these rules, I was like, wow, this is a fantastic idea. So now we've got pretty much, like I said, the last 60 hours or so. And we're still looking at, like I said, right around 5,000 to get it completed. So, Fred, why and who do you think should get on board with this project now that we're about to try and get across that finish line?
Well, it might be now or never, and that's why. Because if we can't get funded, there's no assurances it's going to get produced. I do think we'll try it again, but there's no guarantees. As for who should get on board, well, anybody who's got 90 minutes, because in 90 minutes, you could become the king of Lowland.
Yeah, I love that joke.
Oh, that's a great one.
That's my tip of the hat to my buddy TC.
You know, one thing, I'm sorry, Chris. That I kind of forgot to mention that I really thought was cool about, and I wanted to commend you guys for the idea, and I'm not sure which one of you guys came up with this. The idea that you have these pimped out prototypes that we all signed, the different people that played them and signed, and you got them up in Kickstarter, those sold pretty quick. There's a couple of them still left, and if you are looking to get on board with something that's like a history of a fantastic game, this is a really cool way to do it. How did you guys come up with that, or have you seen that somewhere before, or you just kind of came out of nowhere with that idea?
I think it was pretty much just a come out of nowhere thing. I mean, we wanted to put, you know, a good version of the game out there for the reviewers to say, you know, wow, look at this, you know, get their attention. And then I decided I wanted to turn that around the other way and get the backer attention by, you know, those people who are perhaps autograph hounds want to get some of you guys' signatures in their collection. So making a unique version of the game that's the prototype, got the tricked out meeples, and all of your signatures. That was my angle.
I thought that was brilliant, and I really appreciated us being a part of that. And I know that when I brought the Thunder prototype to Origins, that Mark Spector got some people to sign it too, as well as when he was demoing the game there. And I think that it's really a smart idea. And I mean, I'd love to have the Thunder prototype myself, even though it has my signature on it, but just simply because it's really a cool way to kind of, you know, build this nostalgia around the campaign, but also get different people involved from several different aspects of the board gaming industry, which I think was something that I would not have ever thought of.
Well, there's still two copies available.
There you go.
I'll sign up.
We'll pledge for one.
Okay.
Yeah, I gave each of the prototypes a name, like you alluded to there with Thunder.
Yeah.
I put a sticker inside each cover with one of the pieces of dragon art and gave it the name of the dragon, so that that would build a little more individuality and a little bit more special aspect for the game.
Chris, is that the one that that you and I both signed, the Thunder one?
Yep.
Very cool. So if you want a piece of State of Games Geek All-Stars history, get your butt out there and try and get that Thunder one. Have you just done them randomly, David, or people ask for specific ones?
We'll do it in the order they backed. Whoever backed first will get their first choice.
Oh, cool. So check out
I signed the gold dragon.
What's that?
I signed the one with the gold dragon.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And I currently have in my possession the pyrite, so I'll sign that one too.
Who signed the pyrite for him?
Daryl and John and TC. Oh, no, not TC. Who was there? Daryl and John and whoever had the game before
that. Scott King.
Scott King was there, yeah.
Kinger.
I'll back and get that one then. That's unfortunately, that's the Fool's Gold one, but that's pretty appropriate, so.
So now a lot of people with the new levels, with this iteration, the smaller levels, people were wondering about how, if after the fact, they'd be able to get the minis or the wooden dragon meeple sets. How likely, what are the availability for once the backers have been fulfilled? Are there going to be extras available, or what do you think your plans are as far as if people wanted to get this after the fact, if they love the game so much that they wanted to pimp it out after the fact?
It has been the Game Salute project for a long time now to do a line of little meeples called Adventure Meeples. And we were hoping to spin off the Prince's Meeples as the start of that. So we were hoping, and we still may, obviously, have those meeples made up and bagged up in, you know, say bags of 10 or whatever, and sell those for $3 and, you know, kind of like what Mayday does with the resource tokens for Agricola and that type of thing.
Yeah, I think I saw a Kickstarter project not too long ago that had, pimping out different games like all into one. You know, they had different levels for different games that you could do stuff like that, which was fascinating. And I think that's an unsung art there where people really love to pimp out their games. And when other people have great ideas of how to do it and then they put it up there, I think something like this has a lot of potential, especially once people get the game and it, if they say, if they think the little cubes are just underwhelming, they're like, oh, I got to get those meeples in their hands, at least having an availability.
Yeah. People love custom meeples. I mean, it's like, you know, same thing with custom dice, but there are tons of people who just collect meeples for what they are. And I think the meeples that are in Prince's are really cool. And one thing that we haven't really talked about, I guess, is the overall cost of those things. Meeples are not cheap to produce. I mean, when you have to, every single meeple that you design has to have a custom lathe. So that adds more and more cost because you have to pay for that lathe, you have to pay for the mold, you have to pay for the wood and the paint. And, you know, when people hold them in their hands, they don't really take into account how much cost went into producing those things. So I really see the value that's going into the Princess campaign right now, but also any campaign that has those types of custom molds. So,
yeah, if you look at the meeples on a small pack level, like if you were going to pimp out your game, you'd need 8 packs of supporters, and at $3 a piece, that's $24. Then you need 8 packs of Kingsguard, another $24, and then you need 8 packs of Dragon Lords. That's another $24, and then you get the 4 princes meeples. That's another $3, and then you spent $75 just on meeples.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
It adds up fast, and it's not like we're making a fortune on this. We're skating the edge on the margins.
Yeah, very small margins. And for what people get for their money as far as meeples are concerned, it's really a good value.
Yeah, and it knows, especially, I really like the Kingsguard meeples and the other meeples. I mean, these are things that you could use elsewhere as well. I mean, people do that with miniatures. I mean, a lot of times they'll buy miniatures to use them in other games. These meeples are so fantastic and chunky that you could pretty much use them in other games and things like that. But obviously, you want to use them in Princes because it is a fantastic game. So we'll start wrapping up on the Princes. Please go check out Princes of Dragon Throne, which right now, as we were talking, did just get another backer as well. Another 2 backers, and it's over 20,000 right now. So we're getting that push. So hopefully,
you must have heard us talking.
That's right. You get that buzz going.
See, Fred, get yourself out there and you get some more backers.
that
was me.
We'll just have to have you guys on some more. So we'll switch on over to the Clever Mojo. Chris, take it away, buddy.
All right. So, Fred, thanks for talking about Princes, and we want to encourage everyone out there listening right now to go and back Princes. It is worth it. Matter of fact, I don't know why I've been holding off, and I should not have.
Your fault.
It is my fault. Matter of fact, once we wrap up this podcast, I'm going and I'm pledging at a very high level so I can get all the custom meeples and everything because I love this game. I've been playing it for, 2 years now, over 2 years. So anyway, we're going to switch gears and talk about the plans for Clever Mojo. So, Fred, you can chime in as well. But, David, whatever you have, and we're going to be talking about the plans now. So the next thing that's on the boards for Clever Mojo is King's Forge. Is that correct?
King's Forge and Magnum Opus are both coming out about the same time.
Okay. So let's focus on King's Forge first. What exactly is King's Forge? And I know that it used to be called Forge, and I've been following that for not several years, but at least about a year and a half when I first heard about it. I played it last year at Origins. Tell us a little bit about what King's Forge is and what you have planned for Kickstarter.
Well, King's Forge is, I don't want to call it a dice building game. It's not like Quarriors or anything, but the dice are both your money and your construction resource. So you kind of have a balance between using your dice as money to get more dice and using the dice you've got to build the things you need to build. The backstory of the game is the king needs a new master forge, the person who's the best craftsman in the land. So he's set out this list of things he needs to get crafted, and whoever can build 4 of them first is going to be the new king's forge. And each item you build, like whether it's a table or an anvil or a set of armor, requires a certain number of dice, whether they're metal or wood or gems or magic. And you have to acquire these dice first, and then you have to roll these dice and manipulate the dice to get them to certain values to match the values on the card. So it's collecting the dice, using the dice to build things, and being the best craftsman you can be.
Yeah, and I remember it was a lot of fun when I played it. Actually, I played it last year at Gen Con, not Origins. But I remember that the game was a little swingy when I first played it. But at the same time, there was that last push. I played it with you and Ken Grazier. I was a little bit behind, but I was able to push forward at the end game and really get the dice that I needed. I thought it was a great mechanic as far as you said it was kind of like not exactly dice building like in Quarriors, but pretty close to that. When we're talking about building and dice building and deck building and things like that, Magnum Opus is sort of a deck builder, right?
Magnum Opus is definitely a deck builder.
It is. You're putting that label on it right now. It is a deck builder.
Yes.
Okay.
Woo-hoo! But it's not. It's not like Dominion or Thunderstone or Ascension. It's not about building up points. It's about going for a specific goal. And if you get there first, you win.
All right. Well, tell us what Magnum Opus really is. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I plead ignorance on Magnum Opus. I've heard you mention it before, but I don't know anything about it.
You know how in Ascension you've got the line of available cards, and in Dominion you've got the set of cards that you can purchase. In Magnum Opus, what you've got is a experiment grid, what we call the discovery grid, discovery matrix. It's got four alchemical elements down one side and four more across the top. And you gather those elements together and you play them out and you do transmutations on them. And based upon where they intersect on that grid, on that matrix, is the discovery you make by transmuting those elements together. And you will get a piece of the clues to build the Magnum Opus or build the Philosopher's Stone, or you'll get some knowledge that'll help you, the ability to manipulate a die that you have to roll during transmutation, or a special element that you can use to make the transmutation easier. So it's all about getting the three clues you need to build the Philosopher's Stone, and then getting those particular elements to the table and getting the successful transmutation. Because once you do that, you're going to win the game.
Well, I mean, you got a deck builder and you also have a die roll in there. I think that Dan may back this one.
This is sight unseen. This is backed.
Yeah, he's going to actually fund the entire project probably.
Sweet.
And it looks pretty random. So that, I mean, as far as setup goes, which is something I really really like. Is,
right. The discovery matrix is a 16 result table basically, and you've got more than that in the number of cards that you put out there. So you're going to get a different selection of cards every time you put it out there, and the discovery matrix is actually two cards deep. The top card for each slot is the result of the transmutation, but the card below that is a piece of research information that only the person who does the first successful transmutation gets. So it's not just, it's not just the clue on top, it's what you learn from the clue that's below there. So you're getting every game is a constant mix of things you can discover and things you can learn from that discovery.
So in each one of these games, just to make me foam at the mouth a little bit more, how many cards total are in Magnum Opus?
Just short of 300.
Wow. Oh,
God.
And in King's Forge, how many dice are in there?
Just short of 100.
So you hear that? That's music to my ears. Those are the things that I love to hear. The nice, big, chunky amounts of great amount of cards, great amount of dice. I'm going to have to go buy I might have to come up with my own line of sleeves for these things just so that I can save some money when I I'm a chronic sleever.
There was a joke about with Viva Java dice, somebody was Dan, did you say you were going to do dice sleeves? Somebody was joking about dice sleeves.
Oh, I think somebody said it and I was like, don't give me any bright ideas, there's something else I need to sleeve.
That'll be fun.
David, who designed Magnum Opus?
Magnum Opus is designed by Ian Steadman. He has a design company called Gamers University.
And how'd you meet him? How'd you come across him?
He submitted Magnum Opus to Game Salute, and I was one of the evaluators on it, and I just fell in love with it.
Awesome.
In fact, I fell in love with it so much that I asked him to put Clever Mojo label on it instead of his own.
Wow.
And he agreed.
That's great. I mean, that's
he's actually local to me too.
Oh yeah, so he's in Arizona.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's in Phoenix.
Well, Fred, while we got you talking, we're gonna shift gears now. I want to focus again on some of your projects that you've been working on the side with David for Clever Mojo, and Monsters and Maidens is one of those. And again, I've been playing this for quite a while, and this is a dice game, and you. brought out Monsters and Maidens and tried it on a new crowdfunding platform. So can you tell us about your experience with this crowdfunding platform and what the future is for Monsters and Maidens?
Sure. Well, Jumpstart City, they sent GameSalut an email hyping their new site, and Monsters and Maidens was chosen as the test to see, you know, how competitive it would be using that site instead of Kickstarter. And it looks like it's going to be a complete failure. It's just more work than the average backer wants to do as far as voting and promoting for weeks before the project even gets to the funding stage.
Now, the site itself is more of a failure rather than Monsters and Maidens, because Monsters and Maidens is also fantastic. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
The Jumpstart City is trying to basically build a Facebook version of crowdfunding. They're trying to gamify it. They're trying to build the social aspects up better. And I think that people just don't want to commit that amount of time to the process.
It's a lot of stuff to do. I mean, it's pretty heavy as far as like the amount of commitment you have to make to something before it even goes into the funding process. It was an interesting experiment. I just don't know that it was quite the right platform or right idea. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting, and I applaud you for wanting to experiment and put Monsters and Maidens on there to see how it would do. And I wish that it had turned out a little bit better for you guys. But you know what? When it comes to testing things out, the pioneers, you guys are pioneers in that, and I'm glad you at least tried it, and especially for the rest of us, so we can see how it worked out.
Well, if nothing else, it could help them, you know, that other site to see what the things are good and what is bad about their idea, and you know, could help to forge them, like you said, the pioneers of helping them to refine what they do there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll put it up on Kickstarter probably a little bit more than 12 days from now.
Yeah.
When that project ends.
How long is the campaign going to be on Kickstarter?
A typical one. It'll probably be 30 days.
30 days. Okay. All right. So definitely everybody out there go and this will be out well before Monsters and Maidens is on Kickstarter, but keep that on your calendar. Go to Kickstarter and keep searching for Monsters and Maidens. It's a lot of fun. Again, it's a really kind of quick playing dice game that I've seen developed for a long time from Fred. And if we know anything about development from Fred, is that he keeps it in development until it's really cooked. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, Fred, you also have another game in development, and one that I've played an early iteration of, and we had a blast last year when we played it, and that's Awesome Possum. So where is that in terms of development?
Well, in terms of development, I almost haven't touched it since you played it last at Origins 2012. I've been concentrating on getting Princes and Monsters and Maidens ready.
Awesome.
So no.
Awesome Possum. So tell us what Awesome Possum is.
Well, it's a pressure luck card game. Well, maybe not all cards, but it's got some cards. But anyway, it's a pressure luck game, and in the style of Ink and Gold. Players are mama possums who have to cross a road to rescue all the runaway baby possums. And as in Ink and Gold, players just have to first decide whether to attempt the road crossing or just go home with the babies they've already rescued. But in Awesome Possum, each player chooses a different section of road to cross, so each player might encounter different hazards, either Vespas or Mini Coopers or Big Rigs.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Awesome.
But no possums are killed in the making of this game.
Fred, how many games have you developed? I mean, it seems like you've got great ideas constantly.
Oh my gosh. I've got a couple of dozen ideas. It started writing notes down, or they're in my head, or even some beginning prototyping. But I just get crazy ideas and see where it leads me.
Might even get Fred's first game, Oubliette, to production someday.
Yeah, that's right, Oubliette. I mean, I've been hearing about that since I first talked to David. So, like, where's that at?
I've been considering putting that in the Monsters and Maidens universe, and having the heroes be the ones trying to escape and get away from the monster. But it's not been touched for quite a while.
Well, that happens sometimes. I mean, we all have different games that we have in development in various stages that kind of get shelved. Speaking of that, we'll go back for a second. But speaking of that, I want to go off script for a second. And David, I want to talk to you about Sailing Toward Osiris.
Sailing Toward Osiris.
Do you still have that in development, and do you want to see that see the light of day?
I do want it to see the light of day. It basically has not been touched since, Origins 2011?
Yeah, it's been a while.
But recently, a great game designer I know has decided that he wants to jump in and help out and get that wrapped up and finished.
Rich Elias?
No. Fred
Who is it?
Fred McKenzie.
Fred McKenzie.
I heard of that guy.
Yeah. Still in a couple more years.
Now, he assures me as soon as Princes of the Dragon Throne is done and out the door, then Sailing Toward Osiris is next on his list.
Very cool. Well, I mean, with that kind of a design duo, I have no doubt it's going to be really good. And matter of fact, I mean, even the iteration that we had at Origins 2011, I had a blast. And I'm not saying that just because I won.
Well, tell me about this mythic Sailing Toward Osiris.
You want to do it or want me to?
No, go right ahead.
Sailing Toward Osiris started off as I wanted to create a game that kind of went backwards almost. A lot of games where you're building up your engine, the game gets easier as you go along because you've got this engine, you're fine-tuning it, it's chugging right along, and you're doing great. In Sailing Toward Osiris, I wanted to make it, as the game goes on, the things you need to do to win are also things that are going to make it harder to progress because you're using up the resources you need. So basically the idea is the barge is sailing up the River Nile. It's got Pharaoh's sarcophagus in it. It's going off toward his final resting place at the Pyramid of Osiris. And you, as a governor of the land, want to show your love for Pharaoh and impress the people and probably become the next Pharaoh by building monuments to the Pharaoh that's just passed. Along the banks of the Nile, as in real life, is the most productive land they've got there. You've got the grain and the clay and the stone quarries. But that's also the only place that they're going to be able to build. So as you progress up the river, you're building more monuments, which is decreasing your ability to get resources. It's kind of like a backwards kind of circle. The really fun part of the game, what Chris was alluding to, I think, is that it's got a really open barter system. You can trade anything for anything, whether it's cards you've acquired or resources or promises to do this or that or the other. And that player interaction really drives the game. You can't always get what you need, but if you can work a deal with somebody else to get that, then you can move forward.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I really loved about the game. I mean, obviously, I love open systems as far as bartering and social aspects, but that was a lot of fun. Not only do you have to manage sort of the mathematics of the game, but you also have to interact and play with the players in the game. So it really gets people involved. And I'm really looking forward to the development of this because I truly enjoyed the experience that we had playing the one of the first iterations of the game. So I'm hoping to see many more of iterations and be involved in those playtests because I really think that it has a fascinating concept and a fascinating theme, but also it has legs. So I really want to see it out there.
Thanks.
Yep. So going back a little bit into other things that are planned for Clever Mojo Games, there are a lot of different ones that games that have your names attached to them. How many more games are up your sleeves, and do you have any more Alien Frontiers news?
There's always Alien Frontiers news.
Yes.
That's what we like to hear, baby.
Right.
Well, we just finished up the rather successful Kickstarter for the promo pack, which is a bunch of cards for extra alien tech and extra agendas and that kind of thing. And we're also working on the next expansion, which is called Outer Belt. And what that does is it adds a sideboard to the game, and that board has an extension of the moon with a new territory on there. So now the territories are not just on the planet, they're on the moon too. And it adds an asteroid belt that moves during the game, and, you know, as asteroids come into range or leave range. And while they're available, you can send your ships out there to mine the asteroids, or to find abandoned spaceships or damaged ships, or even find pilots that will help you manipulate your ships later on in the game.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun. It factions basically change the game a lot. Outer Belt will just kind of grow the game. It gives you more to do from the basic game.
Well, that's awesome. And more to do with your dice is always a plus, because, I mean, we love Alien Frontiers, obviously. I mean, a Dice Hate Me Game of the Year 2010. But I'm really looking forward to this, and I know that you guys have had Outer Belt in development almost as long as Alien Frontiers. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been off and on. The designer is a guy named Randall Bart. He was one of the playtesters for Alien Frontiers and Factions when we were developing that here. He started working on Outer Belt at that time, and then he moved to Los Angeles, and then he continued development there with another set of playtesters, and wrapped it up and sent it back to me, and I'm working on doing some more fine-tuning on it.
I mean, I loved Factions. I mean, it was my expansion of the year last year. It really, you take such a great game, and the beauty of Alien Frontiers, it was such a great game and such a novel concept with dice as workers. But then there was that kind of an end point where you could play it a little too much. And then when you brought out Factions, and I've always said it on the show that player powers are like among my favorite things out there as far as pieces of games. And now it just brought sky's the limit. Now, just hearing now you've gone a step further with more things to do, and like you said, other boards and other things, it's man, I can't wait to see this one.
I think you'll enjoy it. If you were watching the Alien Frontiers promo card Kickstarter, there is a free download there for the print and play for Outer Belt. And people can give it a shot before it's even ready yet.
That's great. And, we should probably print it out and play it and try and test it
out.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we just love Alien Frontiers. I mean, obviously, I mean, we've been championing that game since the very beginning, and I can't wait to see where the Outer Belt expansion goes. Again, Factions was one of the best expansions that I've seen for a board game in a long, long time, and I have no doubt that Outer Belt's going to be the same way. So,
hey, can I go off script here for a second
please,
as well?
Get ready.
You just kind of reminded me. I'm a huge iOS guy, and Alien Frontiers is one of my favorite iOS implementations. I play it all the time on my iPad. Do you guys think that is there a timeline for Factions to get on there at all?
Not right now, no. The developer has other projects he's working on, so we haven't got his resources right now. So there's no real timeline for getting that. We had hoped to add Game Center to the current Alien Frontiers iPad app, but again, he's just been so busy we haven't had a chance to get him working on that.
Do you think that and this is kind of a random question, but a lot of people say that the iOS implementations of their games have actually brought in, well, either online or iOS has actually brought in a lot of sales to their game. Do you think that's helped you guys out with Alien Frontiers? Well, not that anybody probably doesn't own Alien Frontiers yet, but
Yes, I think it actually has helped. We noticed a uptick in the sales after that Alien Frontiers iOS was released. So yeah, there's some crossover in the other direction as well.
That's really, really good because, I mean, it's a weird sort of dynamic where, you know, you're selling something that's fairly cheap as far as, you know, production value is concerned. And to have someone turn around and buy the analog equivalent of that, it's been an interesting phenomenon when it comes to iOS development, which is encouraging for other studios out there who are thinking about doing it or taking a leap into iOS.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And we were really really eager to bring the actual game to the iOS. I mean, a lot of times you'll see games that make that transition from physical to electronic and don't always bring all the aspects of the game itself. But we were really striving hard to make the iOS as much like the board game as possible. So I think that that crisscross back and forth between electronic and physical was made easier by that.
And it's so damn pretty, too.
Yeah, it's beautiful app. And speaking of beautiful, and we're going to get into a little bit about one of the games that I know is going to be fantastically beautiful, Swinging Jive Cat Voodoo Lounge. I have never hidden my enthusiasm for this game. If it was out right now, it would probably be my Dice Hate Me Game of the Year for 2013. Tell me where Swinging Jive Cat is right now as far as development.
It's in Spain. yeah, it's making the tour of the Spanish main there. The artist we've got is Sergi Marcet, who is Spanish and, you know, therefore the Spain reference. He's doing a great job, but he's a really busy and in-demand kind of guy. People may have seen his art in games like Manhattan Project. That was a very good one for him.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
If you're familiar with, there's an artist called Shag who does a lot of kind of 50s, 60s, trippy culture kind of art. And we wanted the game to look as much like that as possible. We even wrote to Shag and said, you know, can you do it for us? But he had recently been in an accident and wasn't in a position to be painting anything right at the moment. But I think we got the next best thing. Sergi is doing a great job bringing that weird voodoo 50s, 60s cocktail culture kind of look to our game. We're quite happy. He's been working on the art for a while now. He's got all the cards are done. All the iconography is done. He's almost wrapped up on the rule presentation, and he started work on the board art. So it's progressing. It's just not racing, that's all.
It's funny, well, when I tweeted that we were going to be talking to you guys, Twitter actually blew up about this game the most of anything.
Sweet.
Yeah, I tell you. I mean, I can't wait. I am... Ever since you told me about this game, and then finally we played the first iteration of it, I guess that was Origins 2011 as well, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, actually.
Yeah, it was. I don't know what it is about this game, both the theme, the gameplay, everything about it, like, hits on all cylinders for me. And the gameplay itself, just, like, for some reason, there are some games that I play that I really enjoy, and it tickles a certain part of my brain. This one, it engages every single aspect of my particular brain, like the tactical playing that I like to do, and the fun and the interaction with other players. And it's just like, I cannot wait for this to get on Kickstarter. It can't get there soon enough. So
I think it was just the martini glasses and the cocktail monkey.
Well, it definitely had something to do with it, but the game itself is a blast to play, but the actual aspect of it, again, you're hanging these monkeys off of your martini glasses, you've got, you know, voodoo skulls. I mean, it's so crazy, just the concept of the game itself, but the gameplay is fantastic. So we're really looking forward to that, and can't wait to you can bring it to Kickstarter. So it's good to hear that it's in development and it's getting toward there. Do you have sort of a timeline where you're thinking? I know that Sergey is basically in Sergey's hands now, but do you think that it's 75%, 80%?
I am hoping that we can have it to Kickstarter by the end of the year.
Okay.
As far as the trippiness of the game, it was designed by a guy named Seth Roback, and he is a throwback to the 60s cocktail culture himself. He is something else, and it just fits his personality perfectly.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat, that's for sure.
Do you think we'll see a copy of that floating around at all at Gen Con? Because it's one of those games that whenever anybody walks by, I mean, every single person stops when they walk by seeing that game.
Sure, I can bring my prototype. Absolutely.
Please, we will play the heck out of that thing.
Yeah, I've been itching. I haven't played it yet. I've seen it played. I just have not played it myself.
Sure, I can bring it.
Awesome. Well, you heard it here on the podcast. I'll swarm you to get swinging.
Look for the big blue noodle. We'll be swinging Jive Cat Blue Noodle Lounge there.
There you
it's
go.
Been Scoop City today on the crossover
<That's>
episode.
<awesome. laughs> So going a little bit off of the game production itself, we'll talk about Clever Mojo as the label. David, can you tell a little bit about your thoughts and the process that led you to place Clever Mojo Games under the Game Salute umbrella?
Sure. Pretty much Clever Mojo Games had grown as much as I could grow it, and still keep it as a one-man operation.
Yeah.
I mean, you do this yourself, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's tons of work. But it's also tons of fun. I mean, we can't deny that either.
Yeah.
But the work was starting to outweigh the fun. Dan Yerrington from Game Salute, he and I had been talking for almost a year, I guess, about the industry and his own plans and what he was hoping to do with Game Salute. And I was pretty much on board for all his ideas. So when he offered me a job as one of his production managers, I made a counter offer, said, you know, you get me, Clever Mojo, the label, all the games I'm working on, and what could be better? So we did the deal, and Clever Mojo now is part of the Game Salute.
And you feel like that was definitely a positive move for you, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I get access to so many wonderful people as a support staff. I mean, we've got Cody Jones, we've got Daryl Lauder, we've got Dan May. These are amazing people, creative powerhouses. And to get them into the background, into the support structure for Clever Mojo has just been wonderful.
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of great people who are involved with Game Salute. And I think that a lot of people don't really understand the infrastructure of what Game Salute is offering and what you're doing with them right now. But I think that it's what you mentioned and what kind of the cornerstone of your point was that when you were doing the one-man show, it become more work than fun. And when you're really doing what you're born to do and what you love to do, when it gets to that point, you've got to start looking for something outside of your own sphere. And I think that you found it with Game Salute, and I'm glad that you did, because definitely with what you bring and the Clever Mojo brand brings to gaming, it's definitely a positive thing. So I'm glad that you found a home there.
Sweet.
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 So I'm going to kind of wrap up. We're about at the 1 hour mark, and I know that we usually go a little bit longer for the Geek All-Stars, but for the State of Games podcast, about an hour is pretty good, and I think we've covered most everything we really wanted to talk about. Are there any other games? Now, I know you have some other games in development.
Sure.
Let's touch on anything else out there that we have not covered right now.
From Clever Mojo aspect or from
the
Game
Salute aspect? Clever Mojo aspect.
Well, we've got King's Forge and Magnum Opus and Monsters and Maidens and Princes of the Dragon Throne and Swinging Jive Cat Voodoo Lounge. What else?
What about the robot title?
Oh, Scrapbots.
Scrapbots.
Rick Collins is the designer on that one. It's kind of like if you mash up Junkyard Wars and BattleBots and MechWarrior and put all those together and then dump them in an arena and let the mayhem begin. It's fun, and I don't know how to describe it other than that. It's just
and the concept of it. And last year I met Rick at Gen Con. He's a really cool guy.
He is.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to actually seeing the development of that title as well. And I know that's a little bit, you know, again, looking forward. You have, you know, Swinging Jive Cat even before that. So are you still actively pursuing and talking to people as far as like getting submissions for Clever Mojo, or are you just kind of playing it by ear in what you see?
I see all the submissions that come through GameSalute.
Oh, right, right.
So the ones that I like best, the ones that I think are the best games that I can get my label on, I'm definitely going to do it.
That's awesome, and that's another good resource. I mean, as a matter of fact, that's how you came across Magnum Opus, right?
That's how, Magnum Opus, exactly.
Right.
I am not going to put the Clever Mojo label on a bad game. So if you see the Clever Mojo label, then you should give that a second look because it's going to be a good game.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, we need to mention another title that has not come up in our discussions right now, but Sunrise City.
Oh, yeah.
Sunrise City is another fantastic game that doesn't get enough love.
True.
And, I mean, I'm not saying that just because I was involved with sort of the art of it, but I love the game itself. And when we played it, again, Origins 2011, we played a ton of great stuff at Origins 2011. Sunrise City is one of those games that I describe to people that when you want to sit down and play a game that is actually, I can't describe it any other way except for chill. It is a game that actually relaxes you for a change, which is weird because there's a lot of tension in the game. But it's still relaxing to play. It's such a good, immersive, relaxing experience. I mean, you're building a city. You've got these huge, chunky tiles. I encourage anybody listening to podcasts right now, if you have not played Sunrise City, go out, try it out. You will want to buy the game simply just because it's so much fun to sit there and see your city grow. It's one of those things that we wish has seen more love, but we definitely want to push because it's great.
Well, and don't let the weight of the actual weight of the box itself fool you. It is really so stinking accessible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a wonderful game. It's easy to play. And do you want another scoop?
Yeah.
Oh, another scoop.
Another one.
Scoop. We have just contacted Isaias about building a small expansion for it.
Awesome.
So.
Oh, yeah. I like that idea.
There'll be some more Sunrise City in our future.
I'm all over that. That's going to be fantastic.
You keep treating us.
What's that for?
Does it bring Godzilla in to destroy the city?
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about a Kaiju City, Sim City cross. I don't think it's going to happen this time. Maybe next.
You boys keep treating us this well. We're going to have you guys on more often with all these scoops.
Well, Dan, you want to wrap us up?
All right. Well, just to keep informed, we're going to probably have, hopefully, a nice big roundtable episode with kind of what we've been playing and things like that coming up. Hopefully, this next weekend as well, we're going to have a Gen Con preview coming up pretty soon. We've got all sorts of great things in development. We will be at Gen Con in person just playing games, not working, which will get more game ideas out there. Also, please check out some of the other great games. Other great gaming podcasts in the Dice Hate, the Dice Tower Network. Yeah, we're working on a Dice Hate Me Network. But,
yeah, buddy.
On the Dice Tower Network, check out the Dice Tower. Check out Secret Cabal Gaming Podcast. Some great other podcasts out there. I want to absolutely thank the McKenzie Brothers, Fred and David. Thank you so much for just coming out of hiding and to come onto this show, our shows. You guys are totally great guys. I just wanted the rest of the world to see how cool you guys really are.
Yeah, we got the J.D. Salingers right here.
Okay. Well, thanks. It's been fun.
Yes, it's been great.
Yeah, thank you guys very much.
And as another reminder, I can't say it enough, please check out Princess of the Dragon Throne up there on Kickstarter. You've got, like you said, a little more than 48 hours to check it out and to get on top of this. This will fund, and you will have a piece of one of the better games out there because it's not going to be the same once it gets out there unless you have this Kickstarter copy. And if you want one of those two, if you can be Chris to one of the other the prototypes, the pimped out prototypes that we've all signed, go get on board to that as well. Chris, anything else?
Nothing for me other than the fact that what you said, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, you'll be hearing me on the Geek All-Stars quite often. We got State of Games coming up. We're going to be going to Gen Con, and I'm basically covering Gen Con completely as a gamer. It's going to be a ton of coverage on DiceHateMe.com. I'll be live tweeting. I'll be also posting daily live blogs to DiceHateMe.com. So as August gears in, we'll go and check that out. Also, I'll just do a quick plug right now on Kickstarter. After you back Princes, and you should back that first, after you back Princes, go and check out Viva Java, the coffee game, the dice game. That is currently
on
Kickstarter.
I pledged.
Did you? Yes, you did. I appreciate that, Fred.
I'm at the deluxe level.
That and the deluxe level is where everyone should be. So if that's you go and pledge, because we have some fantastic stuff planned for the pledge for the deluxe level with as far as stretch goals. It's a fun game, very quick to play, very easily and accessible. Again, even a solo player exists now. So go check it out. Anyway, go check out Princes first. After you get through pledging for Princes, go and check out Viva Java, the coffee game, the dice game. And that's pretty much it for right now. In August, we'll be also pushing Bell of the Ball, but we'll get to that.
I can't believe I forgot Viva Java Dice. I'm so blinded by my Princes.
That's fine. That's what we're here for.
But I love Viva Java. I mean, I can't say enough. I've been tweeting about it, and I can't say enough about how great that game is. Yep. Thanks again, guys. We will see you real soon again. We'll try and get back on. I'm on such a wacky schedule with our podcasting, but we'll get on some sort of regular schedule over the next couple of months.
The summer's a rough time.
Yeah, and it is con season, so there's plenty of good news out there. Plenty of great games. Check out all the Spiel des Jahres. I actually got the chance to play Hanabi, but we will talk about that on the next episode. Yeah, so, Chris, you want to lead us out, see if we can get us...
It'll get us all together?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so until next time, this is us signing off for the Geek All-Stars and the State of Games. You can find me at Twitter, at DiceHateMe. Dan, where can we find you?
At GeekJockBlog, or email the show at thegeekallstars@yahoo.com.
All right. David?
On Twitter, at CleverMojoGames.
And Fred?
On Twitter, at CMGFred, or on BoardGameGeek at CMG2.
CMG2. All right. Well, thanks, guys, for being on the podcast. And until next time, this is Dice Hate Me signing off, saying thanks for listening, and
may all your rolls be sixes.